Shall we start? You can all rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to our great nation. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Have a roll call, please.
Roll call, Director Amezquita.
Present.
Director Bilodeau.
Here.
Director Green.
Yes.
Director Meat.
Here.
Director Nguyen. Here. Director Sheldon.
Present.
Director Tran. Director Wigan.
Here.
Director Whitaker.
Here.
Director Yeo. Okay, you do have a quorum with all 10 directors present.
Okay. First thing we'll do is announce our Employee of the Quarter Award to Environmental Specialist John Merlow. Congratulations. Can we?
Sure.
Yeah, President Green, we're going to have Patrick Bruce Lewis, our Director of Water Quality, say some remarks about John.
All right. Well, good evening, Madam President, members of the board. It is my pleasure to introduce John Merlot, who was selected as the employee of the quarter for the second quarter. John, as you heard, was an environmental specialist, is an environmental specialist that's been with the district for 4.5 years now. John was primarily selected as the employee of the quarter because of his exceptional work that he's been doing with the Coastal Seawater Intrusion Monitoring Program. So that program includes the Talbot Barrier, Sunset Balsa Gap, and also the Newport Mesa area. There's hundreds of wells that he's in charge of coordinating, scheduling, and also reviewing a lot of the water quality data for all those wells. He's been doing a great job on that. In addition, he takes over a lot of responsibilities for equipment repair and meter maintenance. He's actually assigned to our ice machine maintenance and monitoring. And while many people might think that's, it's ice, right? Well, that's actually a critical part for field monitoring and water quality, because you have to maintain specific temperatures for all the samples. And there's field staff that go out each and every day that rely on that ice. And John's on top of that, ensures that there's ice for them each and every day. And he does. He comes to work with a great attitude, and he's a great asset to our department. And it's my honor to actually introduce him as the employee of the second quarter.
Thank you, Pat. Yeah, I just want to say thank you to Pat versus Lewis, my director, my supervisors, Michelle Boyd and Mark Greening. Mark, thank you so much for all your help, your knowledge, everything that you share with me. You take your time, and I really appreciate that. Yeah, to the rest of the department, we couldn't tackle a program like Coastal without you guys. So, yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And it's an honor to be recognized.
Again, congratulations, John. Next, do we have any items received too late to be agendized?
There are none.
Okay. Now is the time for visitor participation. Do we have anyone who would like to speak? Listen? Nobody?
And?
Buddy? Don't see any hands. Okay, moving on to the consent calendar. Do we have a motion? Do we have a, thank you. We have a motion and a second.
Roll call, Director Amezcua. Director Amezcua?
Yes. Yes.
Thank you. Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Green?
Yes.
Director Meeks?
Yes.
Director Nguyen?
Yes.
Director Sheldon?
Yes.
Director Tran? Director Wygant?
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries unanimously 10-0.
Okay, moving on to an update on research and development activities.
Yeah, thank you, President Green. We have our Director of Research and Development here with us tonight, Megan Plumley, and she will give the board an update on the current activities in her department.
Good evening. Just give me a moment and I'll pull up the slides. All right. So I'm happy to be here and to give everyone an update on what we've got going on in the R&D department. If I can advance my slide, let's see. Nope. Okay, let's try the clicker instead. All right. So we issued our most recent twice yearly report in April, and this covers all the projects that we're doing in the R&D program, just in short, maybe half page, one page long summaries. So if you're ever interested in what we've got going on and a recent update, you can look to this report. So it was attached to the staff report for this item today. So we have 19 different projects going on right now, projects and programs ranging from microbiology, chemistry, advanced treatment. But I picked three to highlight just briefly for you today in just a few slides. So for today's updates, I want to tell you about our progress on upgrading our pilot systems, the district-owned ultrafiltration and RO reverse osmosis pilots that we maintain, and then share some study results from a recently completed grant-funded project looking at evaluating a different type of chemical, hydrogen peroxide, as an alternative to the chloramine that we currently use in the UF and RO process at GWRS. And then finally, I want to give you an update on our ongoing PFAS piloting program that we use to try out different treatment medias like ion exchange. We're actually going to be moving the pilot to the Yorba Linda Water District, a full-scale PFAS treatment plant site. All right, so upgrades to our district-owned pilots. So where those are located, so here we are in the boardroom, shown in pink there. Our engineering research center in orange there is next to the microfiltration facility in the plant. And this is our testing facility that houses these different pilots. So here's a photograph at top is the engineering research center. So this outdoor area behind the MF with all these different pilots, we have three ultrafiltration pilots and two reverse osmosis pilots that we're upgrading. So you can see a picture of a couple of them there. So we wanted to improve these to bring them up to more modern standards for the control systems and the user interfaces, and also enable not just the local data storage, but more moving to more of a cloud-based data storage platform. But at the same time, retain all the current functionality that's so important to us. We use these pilots for tests like trying out new treatment chemicals like antiscalant. At a smaller scale, these pilots represent small-scale versions of these membrane treatment systems. So we try out new technologies like new types of chemicals there before implementing at full scale in the plant. So we're working with an outside contractor as well as our in-house team for this project. It's mostly completed. We worked with KDC, the contractor, to develop plans for each pilot. They provided and installed the new hardware. We ran Ethernet to a new router nearby, worked with our information services department to set up the data storage server, and then all the programming and transferring of our prior programs to make them work in the new system. So we're wrapping this up now, just doing some fine tuning. We actually have some newer pilots or new to us that we are commissioning one of our RO pilots and one of the UF pilots and doing some of these upgrades at the same time. And here's some photographs showing KDC working on these pilots, doing some programming. This is the UF pilot 1 and 2. And then a bit of a close-up here looking at the new touch screen, which is very nice to have now versus what we had before, and the new controller and relay. All right, so moving on to the next update on this study using looking at hydrogen peroxide for the UF and RO process. So this work was supported by a grant from the U.S. Bureau of Rec. We submitted a proposal to a competitive program for that, and our partner has been Stanford University. And in this project, we looked at a couple of different alternative disinfectants that could be used instead of the current conventional chloramine that we use for the fouling control and as a disinfectant in the UF and RO process as part of our GWS plant. So why did we look at hydrogen peroxide? So in the plant, we currently add chlorine ahead of the ultrafiltration or microfiltration, depending on the type of membrane installed. We add chlorine ahead of the ultrafiltration process. It forms chloramine in the water, and that acts as a kind of a gentle disinfectant and provides some fouling control for both the UF and flows on into the RO system, so both UF and RO. There are some downsides to the use of chlorine. It does interfere somewhat with the final step of our process, the ultraviolet advanced oxidation process, just competing a bit with the UV light and hydroxyl radicals that we make in that process. And also, using chlorine for disinfection does form some kind of unintended disinfection byproducts, certain types of chemicals, usually chlorinated chemicals, that form as a reaction between constituents in the water with the chlorine. So ideally, we'd rather avoid forming those DBPs. So hydrogen peroxide is attractive as a potential alternative, and it's just like familiar with what you buy at the drugstore. And we actually have some familiarity with this chemical because we already use it in GWRS. It's used in the UV AOP process where we actually add hydrogen peroxide to the RO permeate before it goes into the UV system. So what's kind of elegant about this idea is that if hydrogen peroxide could work instead of chlorine, then instead of adding chlorine ahead of the microfiltration step, we'd add hydrogen peroxide. And it could flow through each of the membrane-based treatment processes and proceed into the UV AOP where we already want to have it anyways. This is a fun slide showing kind of the really cool results that we got. It worked quite well. So this is a snapshot of some of the ultrafiltration data. We also tested it with RO. The x-axis is days of operation for running this UF pilot. The y-axis is transmembrane pressure. So the higher that number is, the more fouling you're seeing, and that means the more energy you're using to make the same amount of water. And the sodium hypochlorite kind of standard or the control in this experiment, when we ran the pilot with this standard chemical, is shown in blue, versus the hydrogen peroxide is shown in orange. So we really saw quite a bit lower TMP continuously with the use of hydrogen peroxide. And not shown is we also had really extended cleaning intervals. So normally when we're using sodium hypochlorite, we'd have to clean an ultrafiltration membrane every few days, and then do a deeper clean maybe once a month. But with the use of hydrogen peroxide, it just ran cleaner, ran better. So we could do a maintenance wash maybe more like weekly and do the deeper cleans perhaps just every 3 months or so. So that was quite impressive. So we presented this project recently at an industry conference just in March. Jana presented it. She's here in the audience. This is her project in the white shirt over there. So as far as next steps, Jana's working on the final report, and we're going to write some manuscripts for scientific journals to share with the broader community. And we met with executive staff to talk about what this means and whether we close out the project or proceed with more studies. And we decided it looked promising enough. We'd like to collect some additional pilot data to fill some data gaps. The pilot testing for the UF was just with ultrafiltration membranes, but we actually have microfiltration membranes in the plant as well. So we'd like to confirm performance with that. And then we'd like to do some additional RO piloting. We really want to make sure that hydrogen peroxide, since it's a strong oxidant, doesn't, negatively impact the membrane integrity over time. All right, finally, update on our PFAS piloting. So just quick background, we've been doing this program since 2019, where we at pilot scale try out different types of adsorbents to remove PFAS from the impacted groundwater. And this allows us to compare different commercially available medias like ion exchange or granular activated carbon and alternative adsorbents to one another to see what basically lasts the longest for removing PFAS from this impacted groundwater. So our ongoing pilot has been at our field headquarters location in Anaheim, using an OCWD-owned well that provides the groundwater to the pilot. So there's some pictures there. Oh, and I should mention, so this testing was the basis for the selection of, in addition to cost, the price of the medias, selection of procurement of medias for the full-scale treatment plants. In particular, the ion exchange is PSR2 plus that's been implemented in a lot of the plants. This is what the piloting looks like. These are carbon columns on the left and ion exchange on the right side. And just a snapshot of some of the findings from this prior work. This is from phase two and three. The phases just refers to new groups of different medias that we tested. And the x-axis is the number of months before we reach 50% exhaustion of the media. So it's only removing half of the PFAS coming in from the influent. So it's just a way to kind of plot the data. We want that number to be larger. It means the media is lasting longer for continued PFAS removal. And so at the top bars are the best performing product in this case, which is the phase one data for the Evoqua PSR2 plus ion exchange. So you can see it goes almost 2 years before it reaches 50% breakthrough. So it lasts longer. So far we've seen that the PSR2 plus continues to be like the longest lasting media that we've tested to date. So we want to continue this program in a fourth phase. And as an update to this program, we'd like to move the pilot to the Yorba Linda plant. That's their full-scale, very large PFAS treatment plant. We'd like to have a driver for this is to assess PFAS removal using a more representative groundwater, because then this is a production well that is serving as the groundwater supply to their full-scale PFAS treatment plant. So now it would be providing the influent to this pilot testing program. So we'd continue to test new medias coming into the market, see if we can identify a better value product, and also some novel media such as coming out of some universities. So we're in conversations with different folks. And we'd like to also take this opportunity to try out some new analytical methods for PFAS measurement that the state of California is evaluating that estimate the total PFAS in water versus focusing on targeted list of individual different PFAS that are regulated. So as far as the current status, we're coordinating with Yorba Linda Water District on different details, like a location of the pilot at their site. And we've also submitted a proposal to the Water Research Foundation, highlighting some of the more novel aspects of the project to see if we can secure a little additional funding. Last slide, just a photo of the impressively large Yorba Linda plant. You can see the ion exchange tanks there. And so the pilot would be a small unit next to all these big tanks, where the red arrow is, probably. And with that, I can take questions if there are any. Thank you.
Any questions? Any comments?
Sure. Okay. Well, thank you so much for the presentation. I'm quite intrigued. We have 19 projects. In terms of funding or resources, where other than the hydrogen peroxide collaboration, I believe, with other agencies, are all the projects in-house, or is it
Right.
a partnership with second parties, third parties, and how are we funding all that?
Right. It's a bit of a mix. It is largely district supported, so we maintain, a small laboratory. We have a staff of about 8 people in the R&D department, and a few instruments that we maintain. So a lot of those costs are covered by the district. And then, as much as possible, we do pursue grant funding to supplement our budget. So we submit proposals, working much like an academic research group at a university, submitting proposals, teaming with universities and other partners to try to get grants. And then when we're successful, we can cover some of our staff labor, and especially sort of the hard costs, like purchasing supplies, we try to cover through grants. Yeah.
Okay, the 19 projects that you've listed, are they multi-year, or because it's only for reporting purposes the first 6 months, but are some of these projects been ongoing?
Yeah, most of them, I would say the projects are the two are typically 1 to 3 year time frames, but we do have a few I call programs because they just kind of keep going forever. So examples are anti-scalant testing for the GWAS plant is really important because that's critical for pretreatment and it's a costly part of our process. And there's always new types of anti-scalants coming into the market. So we maintain a program of trying out anti-scalants at the smaller scale using an RO pilot. So it's something we just continue with year after year.
Thank you. One last question, if I may, Madam President. I feel like I'm going back to the university with the projects and the laboratories and all of that, and the publication as well, which is so it's good academically that you're sharing, or at least OCWD is sharing the information or the results of these tests and studies with the industry. From a practical standpoint, and I'm sure that the lab has been ongoing or has been in operation for decades since the founding of OCWD. I'm just curious from a practical standpoint, and I'm sure that there are, but if you may, you may share with us some of the results that you were able to find or conclusions that you were made that turn into a practical application with what we do as a service agency,
Sure.
basically from the lab to the field or to practice.
Yeah, I think the PFAS work is probably the most recent example. We have published all of our PFAS piloting work through the different phases of testing. There's some novel tasks sort of within that having to do with questions like, can we use laboratory scale methods to predict these results without necessarily the time and cost of a pilot? So, in addition to just sharing, which media has performed however well they did, other novel questions like that. So, we've published all that work, but at the same time, it's an incredibly practical and applied project for the district because it's how we compared medias to see what might be perform best for our water and our situation here in Orange County with the PFAS impact to the groundwater
That
supply.
practice is being applied right now.
Yes. So these different full-scale PFAS treatment plants at the various producer sites, either completed or under construction, the media is going into those vessels were all trialed first in this testing program that the R&D group ran. And it's still running and wants to move to Yorba Linda Water District. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Director Yeo.
Thank you, Madam President, and Dr. Plumlee, thank you for the wonderful presentation. My question is regarding the microphone is blocking our view. My question is regarding the chart. It was very interesting comparing the hydrogen peroxide and sodium hypochlorite, that it looks like the H2O2 is looking promising. Is it have you started looking into the economics? Obviously they cause different, right? And or is it a bit premature to
Yeah,
start
we
looking at
have.
it may perform well, but it's so expensive and
Absolutely. Right. I always try to do that pretty early on in our projects because we don't want to spend a lot of time studying something that, even if it worked very, very well, wouldn't be practical cost-wise, right? If we wouldn't do it anyways, despite really great results. So we have been evaluating the costs and it looks pretty good. It looks basically the same cost to using chloramine. Yeah. Of course, we'd want to sharpen our pencil on that. So I think in a next phase, if we were really thinking about, a full-scale implementation down the road, then we'd want to bring in probably, a more fine-tuned cost analysis to kind of verify that. But it's looking pretty good based on a back-of-the-envelope calculation. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Do we have anyone? Okay. Megan, on the you said there was a difference in the amount of PFAS in the water at the field headquarters versus Yorba Linda. Is that what I heard you say?
Not a large difference. I guess I was more generalizing. It's a more representative water quality. So the BSEE well that we have been using for our program to date is a more shallow groundwater, And it's not a potable well. It's been used for water supply, like non-potable water supply, but it does have generally representative PFAS quantity and PFAS distribution. We do see a little difference at different producer sites in terms of, but it's very similar. So I think the driver is more kind of general water quality as well as the PFAS. And it just makes a lot of sense that now that we have these full scale plants built, including the Yorba Linda site, to tap into, no pun intended, the actual water supply that is feeding the full-scale PFAS treatment plant and use that to trial promising medias.
Do you expect to see much difference?
I think we might actually see longer life of certain medias because there is a little less organic carbon in the deeper production well water compared to our Bessie well site. So that could be an example of where we might see a difference. Yeah.
All right. Yes, please.
I just want to thank you for the work that you're doing and acknowledge. I mean, I think it's important. This is all new, it's cutting edge, and for OCWD to be part of their own destiny and not just rely on other consultants or people that are trying to sell you a particular type of filtration system or something. I think that's really important. And then sharing the information with the industry, because I think that's that way we'll get the best results in, for the future. So thank you.
I agree. Thank you for your report. Very good. Okay, moving on to SOPA update, Director Whitaker.
Yes, I have a few things to report on yesterday's SOPA Commission meeting. The commission itself had a couple informational items, a report, really a summary on our first year of our test 4-year period for cloud seeding, and not really at the analysis stage yet. We're gathering information for the most part. So it's a fairly thorough report, and there's much more to be found from that. I wanted to explain a couple of things about it. Maybe a lot of people in here are aware, but the Santa Ana watershed comprises an area of mostly three counties, a very small amount of LA County, but all of Orange County, Riverside, and San Bernardino counties, not all of those larger counties, but a good share of it. In fact, the watershed itself encompasses an area in which there are over 6 million people, 6 million residents, which means about one in six Californians, a little less than one in six Californians, lives in the Santa Ana River watershed. And we've had a lot of interest in the cloud seeding and what that's doing to or for the environment. And we're at that early stage. I wanted to point out that this report was mostly focused on operational aspects. So we have 15 units spread throughout that watershed area, which are mostly located near the base, the western, southwestern face of the San Gabriel Mountains, San Bernardino Mountains, San Jacinto, and Santa Ana Mountains. And the attempt mostly, a lot of people aren't aware, with cloud seeding, you think of rain, but the attempts here mostly, these are all ground-based units, and they're intended to create snowfall and to increase the snowpack predominantly. They were targeted in the first year, and they will be in future years, to atmospheric rivers that look like they have potential to generate a fair amount of precipitation. And the other thing on the operational aspect was how often those were operated this past season, the first season, and where they were operated and when, and for what duration. So there's a lot of data, too much to cover here, but I just wanted to say there will be more to come on the cloud seeding very much. The other item that we had informationally was enhancements to watershed-wide water budget decision support tool project update. And this is a partially state-funded grant for SOPA, which is intending to get very detailed, very granular information down to parcel size throughout the watershed for mostly external irrigation, and determining what baselines are and what the priorities would be. And what is kind of a determining factor on water use and how it's being utilized going forward. The other thing outside of the SOPA Commission meeting was following it was the PA24 committee, which it does frequently. Now, OCWD, who I represent, is not part of PA24 because PA24 looks at the brine line. So the brine line is designated to take sodium basically out of the Inland Empire, and it funnels down to OC San. So General Manager Jeff Mosier asked me to stay for that meeting. There were a lot of financial aspects that they were going through as well. And it was particularly useful to me because I'm a director at OC San as well. But what's happening with the brine line is with population growth and changes, and especially now water reclamation efforts upriver, they're getting more volumes into the brine line, and they're in danger of not having capacity to handle the current flows. So we're looking financially at the needs and trying to determine how to manage and not wind up overbooking customers in a sense, in a way that we really can't handle unexpected flows. So that's all that I have this evening, unless there are any questions.
Comments?
Great, thanks.
Very much. Okay, moving on to our committee reports, retirement, Chair Mesqua.
It's in the binder.
Okay, joint planning, it is also in the agenda. Property, Chair Sheldon.
Thank you, Madam President. The information can be found in the binder, in the packet.
Okay. Verbal reports. I don't have a report tonight. General Manager.
Just briefly let the board know that General Manager Kennedy is enjoying his vacation in Montana this week. He did ask me to pass along that he will be receiving the newly seated Orange County Grand Jury next week on Tuesday. The 13th, they will be coming by and paying us a visit and meeting with the general manager, and he'll provide them an overview of the district and answer any questions they have.
Okay, General Counsel.
Thank you, Madam President. No closed session this evening. I have nothing else to report.
We are adjourned. Good night, everybody.